And we are back with another episode of the USMNT Thoughts Podcast. Of course, I'm Dalton Kemper, as always, at Dalton Kemper, along with Vince Maduri at USMNT_thoughts on Twitter. Vince, I know we took last week off. You were traveling a little bit. I think this is out there, so I'm going to ask you about it. You went to Trinidad.
Yeah.
Did you feel a curse in the air or something terrible from 2017?
I did. It was not, I knew I had to go down. I was attending a colleague's wedding. And as soon as I was going to go down, so his wife is from Trinidad. And, as soon as I was going down, I knew that this was going to be just like a very difficult experience for me as a U.S. men's national team fan. Of course, I've known this all along. Like, when I met his wife the first time, of course, this is they all know I'm a big soccer guy, right? So this was the first thing that she brought up. She met me and she was like,
"You're
so,
like,
we
wrong
beat you
foot.
In 2017.
You started out.
Like, ah. So we can't start there. You can't start there. But yeah, so I knew I was going down there. I did not, unfortunately, have a chance to drive by the stadium. I was going to take some sage and light it up and, you know, kind of just go through just exercise the demons. Didn't get a chance to do that. But I will say my cabbie on the way out of the airport into the hotel, it was right when the Balogun stuff was going down. And he happened to be a soccer fan. And so we were talking about the Balogun stuff and he is aware of him and how he was doing in France and whatnot. And he, of course, takes the opportunity to bring up 2017. He's like, so 2017, we beat you out. I'm like, they will not let this go ever. And no. I don't blame them. I don't blame them. This is like a shining light on them for the last how long, how many years? I think they were in the 2006 World Cup. But other than that, when was the last time Trinidad had advanced past the hex? I don't think they have.
Yeah, that's a banner hanging moment for them that they're going to remember forever. So I guess congratulations to them. Seems like they're wonderful people. So I guess congratulations. And that was a necessary thing that had to happen to us, unfortunately, to reboot the program a little bit. My next question is CONCACAF related still, which is, where did Canadians get the nerve? Because Kyle Larin, a Canadian national team player, has said that Canada is the team to beat in CONCACAF now. I've seen Canadian fan pages tweeting over the past couple of days about how they are the best team in CONCACAF now. I'm actually going to find, I quote tweeted one today, so I need to go back and find it. No wonder the USA hosts every Gold Cup and CONCACAF Nations League final. It's the only way they can win a trophy. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, that was like Canadian men's national team universe or whatever, right?
Yeah, exactly. I'm like,
my guy, like we've had some conversations. He's a nice guy, but like, you give them just a little bit of success and they're just freaking running with it. Honestly, come on, win a trophy before you start calling yourselves the top dog in CONCACAF.
They used to be like a likable little brother figure where it was like, oh, it's really cool to see Canada doing well. Alphonso Davies, everyone loves him. Jonathan David, incredible player. But now it's getting to a point where it's like, we need to humble you a little bit.
That's exactly right. And honestly, like, I was one of the first people during during the World Cup qualifiers to welcome them officially, to say like, we are now the three big teams in the region. I welcomed them to the club. I think that, you know, them getting good is a good thing for the region. So I'm not against this at all. But I mean, come on, have a little bit of humbleness. You have not won a trophy yet. Let's get there first before you start acting like your top dog.
Yeah. You have the best player in the region. I'll give you that. Other than that, pipe down a little bit. I hope we meet in the Nations League final. So then we can kind of, you know, settle this thing. So we'll see how that goes. But I saw a lot of pro Canada national team stuff saying how they were the best team in CONCACAF. And I was like, this is ludicrous. What they've done, worst team at the World Cup, by the way.
Yeah.
Statistically, you didn't make it out of your group. The U.S. did. So you might pipe down a little bit. You haven't done anything yet. So chill out.
We beat them in the Gold Cup 2 years ago, right? Didn't we?
Yeah, I was there. I was at that game in Kansas City.
That's right. So we beat them in the Gold Cup. We beat them. Did we beat them in Nations League too? Yeah, we did because they were in our group. We beat them like 6-0. Like
they're hanging their hat on a World Cup qualifier for sure.
They definitely. So I get it. Like they beat us in Toronto in that group stage for Nations League a couple years ago. That was like the low point of the Greg Berhalter era. So, I mean, like, I don't, you know, it was what it was that time. We looked like crap in that moment. It was like right before COVID, I think, if I remember right. But then they go in, they have a draw against us in Nashville in World Cup qualifiers, and they escape with a win in Hamilton. I don't know, man. Like, they're really hanging their hats on a couple of those home results. It's fine. Good for you guys. I'm glad that you're competitive now. Again, it's good for the region. But come on, win a damn trophy first.
Yeah, yeah. Chill out a little bit. How about that? Chill out. All right. Let's talk about the U.S. men's national team games that just happened in this previous window, CONCACAF Nations League. First, let's talk about Grenada. 7-1 victory for our boys. I did not watch this game when it was on, admittedly. I don't think a lot of people did, because it was like, it's one of those games where it's like, look, I can watch that later and see what I need to see. I would hope, I checked the score. I was busy. I was actually playing a rec league soccer game myself. I know, athlete here.
There you go.
I finished it. I checked the score. I was like, okay, 7-1. The boys took care of business as they should have. I'm very thankful for that.
Yeah, I didn't watch this game live either because I was in Trinidad at the wedding at the time. And, you know, actually, ironically, just like, what, 20 minutes plane ride south of where the boys were playing in Grenada. But I didn't watch it live. I went back, rewatched it on tape delay, you know, albeit not very intensely or closely, because I already knew the score and I wasn't expecting a competitive game in the first place.
Right.
So my big takeaway is, like, honestly, you can't take anything away from a game against Grenada. We learned that in Austin, you know, before the World Cup. So I'm not learning any of this. What I will say is I'm glad the boys had fun. You know, it's sort of like you go out there, you just hammer an opponent that is, it's almost like in college football when you have like the warm-up game against the FCS team, you know. It's like, yeah, great. I didn't learn anything, but glad we had fun.
But hey, I mean, the fans get a little drunk and you have some fun. That's what it's about.
Hopefully the American Outlaws hit the beach afterward or something.
Honestly, a couple things that I wanted to point out about this game that were, regardless of the opponent, they're good signs. Pepe scoring twice.
Yeah,
I know we have to take into account the competition, but Pepe had not scored for a while for the U.S. He's been playing very well for Groningen. So it was really good to see him get on the score sheet again for the U.S. And then also Zendejas getting his first USMNT goal after just deciding to commit to the men's national team. That was really good to see. And overall, overarching in the game, Christian Pulisic dominated, which should be expected for him at this level against a team like Grenada. But it was still really awesome to see, just like, they had no answers for him. It was just CP10 at his peak, where he was dribbling and all the other team could do was foul him. He looked really good. It was really fun watching that. He didn't get hurt.
Thing,
so.
This is like the fun thing about CONCACAF, right? Like a Champions League winning winner. He's going up against literally semi-pro competition guys that are like, you know, probably like electricians or dentists in their spare time.
Yeah. So, like I said, got to take the competition into account, and he should have done that, but he did. So that's a very good sign, and I was very happy to see that.
Yeah. All things considered, again, glad Pulisic had fun.
Yes.
You know, don't take too much into it. I agree with you. Like, the big things is just Pepe's and Dejas getting you know, their confidence in the team, and for Pepe getting his confidence back, Zendejas getting his confidence established. All of those good are good things out of the Granada game. That's exactly what it should be for. You know, the last time we played them, we used it for Jesus Ferrer to pad stats and
yeah, no kidding.
Look like one of the greatest strikers of all time, and somehow we gave him a World Cup spot over that.
How many goals do you think Erling Haaland would score against Grenada?
Oh my god.
90 minutes. You give him the full 90.
Yeah. Can we just say 90? He's going to score once a minute.
I was going to say 9, and I don't think that's crazy.
It's certainly not. It's absolutely not crazy. Mm. If he got supply, like, let's not put him again, like, with the similar competition or something like that, because he would need supply. But you gave him a competent roster that supplied him the ball, he would score. I honest to God don't know if he wouldn't score like 15, 20 goals in that game.
He's on another level. Only thing we didn't get out of the Grenada game that I would have liked to have seen is a clean sheet. It kind of sucks to give one up there. It would have been really nice for the defense and Matt Turner to have that on that feather in the cap too, but what are you going to do? Sometimes even those teams can get one. Let's talk about the El Salvador game, where I think we have more things to talk about just because it is a higher level competition. We have, in recent years, El Salvador has been a tough, tough game for the U.S. Hugo Perez, I think we agree, is a really good coach and always has that team well set up, especially to play the U.S. So yeah.
He knows us so well. He knows the player pool. Hugo Perez is a fantastic manager, and he always plays us really tough because he knows the player pool so well.
Yeah, 100%. So a couple of things that to talk about in this game. First, I want to talk about Miles Robinson. To return from his Achilles tear last year, Achilles tear is one of those injuries where you don't know if a player is going to return to the level they were at before. And it is, it's one of the worst injuries you can have. He's come back and played very well for Atlanta United. He played incredibly, incredibly well in this game. Miles Robinson was all over the place in that center back position. And I loved seeing him back to the Miles Robinson we saw in World Cup qualifying and everything, where he was covering all the ground, he was winning duels, everything that we need a center back to do. I loved the partnership of him and Tim Ream personally.
Yeah, I did too. I actually have a question on this. Two questions, speculative questions for you, Dalton. If Miles Robinson never gets hurt, do we beat Wales?
Yeah, I think we do.
And the reason why I'm like even prefacing that as a question is, who does he replace in the lineup? The second question is, does Tim Ream make the World Cup roster if Miles Robinson?
That's what I thought about too. Yeah.
Yeah. And so like, would the pairing have been Miles Robinson and Walker Zimmerman in that game? And if they did leave Walker Zimmerman off and Tim Ream still made the roster and still played left center back, I agree with you. I think we beat Wales. I don't think that the mistake ever gets made with Walker. And I think that we win 1-0.
I just don't know if, like, in Berhalter's mind, I don't know if in Berhalter's mind, I think Zimmerman was his number one center back. So yeah. I think it was going to be who plays next to Zimmerman instead of who plays next to Tim Ream. Even whenever we got to the World Cup and Tim Ream was in such good form, I think in Berhalter's mind, it was who my pairing with Zimmerman, not who my pairing with Ream. But if Miles Robinson was playing like this, you could also, you'd have a hard argument not starting him next to Tim Ream.
Yeah, I'd completely agree with you. I ultimately think that Berhalter would not have brought Ream in the first place.
Unfortunately.
So the mistake probably still would have gotten made. It's not like, you know, Miles Robinson would have been better performance wise than Tim Ream was in the World Cup. Tim Ream was outstanding. But if Berhalter made the right decision, speculatively, and played Tim Ream with Miles Robinson, I think we win that game.
Yeah, I totally agree. So Miles Robinson, incredible game. Hopefully he can continue a strong start to the season with Atlanta and keep that going. But then also, let's talk about the striker situation. Daryl DK got the start in Orlando, which I think everyone kind of expected. Game in Orlando, yeah. Back in Orlando, DK was probably going to get the start. He did. He comes off after 61 minutes. Pepe comes on in the 61st minute and scores in the 62nd. So another incredible, great to see from Ricardo Pepe that he is scoring, and you can tell he is confident. Confidence for a striker is so important. And the way he just lofted that over the keeper, lofted his goal into the back of the net, just right over the keeper. That's not a goal Pepe would have had, I don't think, a year ago. He wouldn't have had that movement that freed him up from McKinney to play that ball. And I don't think he would have had the confidence to just chip it over the keeper like he did. So Ricardo Pepe, just incredible performance again. I saw people were kind of really down on DK after this. Yeah. I think that's kind of unfair to DK because the first half was so not fluid in attack and he wasn't getting a lot of service. But it is also partly on DK because he doesn't do as much in the buildup as Pepe does. And so it is a little bit on DK, but I think a lot of it was undeserved because the service was not there.
Yeah, the service certainly wasn't. The team didn't play well again in the El Salvador game. They simply didn't play well. Like you said, some of that is due to Hugo Perez and how he sets up the team and disrupts what the U.S. wants to do. But it wasn't a very good, fluid attacking game. Daryl DK did not get the supply. He didn't help in the buildup. That's not really what Daryl DK does. You kind of expect that, honestly, out of him. So if you put in a big physical striker that's there to finish plays and he doesn't get the supply, he's going to look like he's lost. And that's exactly what happened, in my opinion, there. Ricardo Pepe is more of an all-around striker. I think he's very, very good in multiple facets of the game. He's good at pressing. He's good at in the buildup. And he looked like a better fit for this game once he entered it and got the goal. Mm-hmm.
Almost had another on just a beautiful touch to bring the ball down and almost put it in, and it would have been highlight reel stuff. Daryl DK, though, just in regards to him, I also want to say that having a big striker like DK is supposed to be really helpful on set pieces, and our set pieces were terrible. I think there might be someone that takes him that shouldn't be. And I think he might go by the name of Christian Pulisic.
I feel so bad for harping on this point as often as we do, but it is just so obvious. And
it doesn't go where it's supposed to, man.
No. And you know, Gio Reyna is actually very good at set pieces, and he was on the field, right? So, like, just let him take them, in my opinion. And I don't know, Gio Reyna might
just
not
got
be
a
the
text
most
from
popular
Claudio.
Person.
Yeah. Just got a text from Claudio. He said, yeah, put Gio on set pieces, please.
So he agrees with us. That's right. That's a shocker. no, I know he might not be the most popular person in the locker room. I know that they're saying all the right things, right? But I mean, like, if you read between the lines of Pulisic's interview with ESPN when he was talking about, like, you know, how he was pissed off that people were complaining about playing time. Look, there's no one else he's talking about in that instance. I would imagine that Gio Reyna's got some making up to do in that locker room, and it's not going to be something that's solved in one camp. But if they were being honest with whose skill set fits with delivering set pieces, it's Gio. It's not Christian.
I did tell you they weren't going to put him in front of a microphone. I want to revisit that.
Yeah, I knew you were gonna talk about that. Honestly, like you were probably always gonna be right, and I knew that at the time. But it's just, you know,
what should have been done was different, right?
What should have been done is squash this now, so that we don't have to continue to talk about it. Let him answer the questions. Let him address it. Let's get this over with, and let's all move on with our lives. I'm disappointed that didn't happen. And now I feel like media are going to kind of reiterate that, oh, is Gio Reyna fitting in the locker room? That's going to be a subject at every camp that he comes into.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's give Gio his flowers, though. He played very well in that central number 10 role in the El Salvador game. We've been wanting to see that for a while now. We've seen him out wide plenty, but seeing him in that number 10 role with Moose and McKinney sitting behind him, he played very well and was very in control, I thought. So very solid game from him.
Yeah, there were two major things that I took out of this. Like, the tactical adjustment was really smart. You don't have Tyler Adams. Tyler Adams would be playing that sticks role.
And I want to talk about him in a second, by the way.
Yep. And with Tyler out, like, we don't have a natural replacement for what he does and what he brings to the team. So don't try to do it. Like, don't bring Kellen Acosta to this camp and put him as the six just to have one. Don't put Johnny Cardoso there when he's not ready or anything. Like, there's no reason to do some of those things. And instead, let's play with the double pivot. And you have Gio Reyna, who's a natural 10 that can play in that role. And it looks really, really good. And to your point, like, especially against teams like Granada, where you know you're going to have the ball, and you give the freedom for the double pivot to allow one of them to go forward when necessary, like Westica arrive late in the box, Yunus Musa to carry the ball through the midfield if necessary. All of that really worked well. And I think if you're planning to have the ball for the lion's share of possession in a game like this, that double pivot actually ended up working because it didn't have to be a double pivot in position or in possession. And Gio was kind of free to do his thing. Christian was free to do his thing on the left. I thought that that looked really, really good. I thought it was a good tactical adjustment.
Which has led people, some people, I've seen this opinion online, to say, is Tyler Adams a nailed-on starter still, or should the U.S. going forward do this type of formation with Musa and McKinney and allow Reyna to play that number 10 role? I have my thoughts on this, but I want to hear yours first.
Tyler Adams is a nailed-on starter for this team, and I don't care what anybody says. I don't know if you would want to consider taking somebody else out of that role and allowing him to have a distributor like Yunus Musa next to him. Like, Wes is an incredible player, so I don't. It's very difficult to say, oh, you need to take out one of those guys. But you're sitting one of them, right? Like, we've talked about the issues with playing Gio Reyna on the right wing when Pulisic's playing left wing and you don't have any of your wingers playing vertically. So in that case, like, if you really can only play Gio and Pulisic together when one of them are playing the 10 role, then you have to remove a midfielder. It's a difficult dilemma that I think that we have, and it's going to continue to be a problem as we continue to add depth to this national team.
Yeah, I absolutely agree that I saw those opinions and I was like, you've got to be kidding me. Like, Tyler Adams is, I think, if I'm putting a team, a starting lineup together for the U.S., Tyler Adams is my first name on the sheet. And I'm talking over Pulisic. I'd have Tyler Adams on there. And I want to, there's a couple moments in this game where even with Musa and McKinney kind of, you know, doing Tyler Adams' role together, there was a couple moments on the counter where Musa or McKinney gets caught out and the counter is on through the middle and or something like that. And I was like, Tyler Adams stops that like immediately. Right. And that's what he's so good at. He's so good at stopping those counters and being in the right place at the right time. And a lot of people are taking into account what the attack might have looked like with McKinney and Musa. They're not taking into account what the defense and the midfield looked like with them. And it was against even competition like El Salvador. It was questionable at times. We didn't get scored on, so it didn't come back to bite us. But there was a couple of times where I'm like, Tyler Adams covers that by himself and doesn't get turned around and out of position like McKinney and Musa were a couple times. I'm not saying it was a lot. Yeah. But there are two guys doing one job, essentially doing Tyler Adams' job. And there were times where I was like, that doesn't happen with Tyler Adams in the game.
Yeah, you're spot on here. And again, like, revisiting what I said about like the lion's share, but it works. Not even like focusing any effort on the defensive side of the ball works for a team like Granada, where you know you're going to have the ball 75% of the time. You know that they have absolutely zero threat to attack. By the way, they scored a goal. And so it's like, You know that it doesn't matter if you give up some opportunities in transition because there's not a real threat. And even if there were, you're going to score seven goals on this team anyways, just because of the attacking players that you have in the game. As soon as they play even a remotely better team in El Salvador, again, I said this earlier, we did not look good. So you can't all of a sudden change up your entire system and say, oh, well, we need to play with the double pivot and drop one of our best players. Just to play with this double pivot that didn't work against an okay team. El Salvador is good. They're structurally sound. They have a manager that knows how to play against us. But ultimately, that's all it is. They're not a very good team. They're just a solid team. And if as soon as you play against better competition, it's going to look even worse.
I'll say this too. If Miles Robinson wasn't starting, I think we give up a goal and don't win that game, because Miles Robinson kind of played a little bit of that Tyler Adams role from center back in the sense of stopping counters and being the interceptor and everything there. He would step forward when needed, and even getting back from corners, he was in the right spot at the right time. So without Miles Robinson, and with just assuming there was no Robinson, no Adams in this game, I think it's very different. But Miles Robinson kind of covered up a lot of the shortcomings without Tyler Adams in the midfield.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. So I don't think that Tyler Adams should be dropped from this team.
No.
Just based on the performances in the Nations League.
I'm glad we agree. I saw that. I was like, you got to be kidding me. So it was just a wild, wild thing I saw. All right.
But it is a good point, honestly. Like, we're going to continue to have these debates because the pool gets more and more deep every single time we add players and we have another guy kind of come up from the youth ranks. So I get why people are starting to say this, because they're going to fall in love with some of these depth pieces.
Yeah.
And those depth pieces might deserve to start. That's all part of the problem of developing a very good national team pool. So I understand having the debate. I'm happy to have it. Some players are not going to be able to start. You can't start more than 11 players, right? So it just is what it is.
So let's also talk about another potential men's national team player, Balogun. He was... Look, everyone knows at this point, especially people who listen to this podcast, but a quick rundown. Balogun was left off of the England national team roster for their window. Immediately posted on his Instagram story, "Go where you're appreciated," which very clear shot at the England national team there. Gets invited to the U21 camp for a second leading scorer in Ligue 1, by the way. Kind of a interesting play there, especially after he said "go where you're appreciated." One day after, he pulls out of camp with a quote-unquote injury, even though he had played a full 90 in the French league before that. And then he ends up the next day in Orlando, where the U.S. men's national team was having camp. Obviously, he was all about in Orlando. He went to a Magic game, he went to a Yankees spring training game, he was all over the place. He was teasing us on Instagram, and conversations were held, obviously, about with Balogun about his international future. And before this window, I would have said 70% or higher. I definitely think he's going to choose England because that's probably where he wants to represent. But after this window, I would say it's flipped, that I think he's more than likely going to choose the United States. What do you think?
I think he's going to wait and take his time, see what happens. I don't think anything's going to happen immediately, but I do think that ultimately he's probably going to choose the U.S. men's national team. Just based upon the comments from Gareth Southgate. I mean, Gareth Southgate just did not seem very high on him at all. What? Yeah. It was funny to look at of him saying like, oh, well, he hasn't gotten any Premier League minutes. It's like, okay, so I guess playing in another top five league and being the second leading scorer in that top five European league. By the way, the leading scorer of that league is Kylian Mbappe.
Yeah.
So he's second only to Kylian Mbappe in goals in a top five European domestic league. Like, come on, man. The guy is a really, really good player. But we know how the English national team is. Like, they just don't rate other leagues, with the exception of like Jude Bellingham and Jadon Sancho. Like, they just don't ever bring in players from other leagues. So it's just,
Sancho got left off the roster when he was lining it up for Dortmund a couple times too.
You're absolutely right. Like, Jude Bellingham is the only one that has kind of like consistently gotten on the team, despite the fact that he plays in Germany. I just don't know, man. I don't understand why they do it this way. It's like, I'm a big Premier League guy, but I don't understand why they're so stuck up with their own league. Balogun to me is incredibly more higher upside than Tony, for example. Like,
even Ollie Watkins.
even Ollie Watkins, like it doesn't make any sense to me why they do it this way, but they do. So that's why I think eventually he'll pick the national team. I think he is going to wait and see if he can like force his way into the team just through his performances, or if he can get back to Arsenal next year or something like that. But ultimately, I do think that Balogun will end up playing for the national team just because of the way that England operates.
Fingers crossed, because the talent that he has is incredible, and we'll see where it leads. There will be more internet investigations to be done. So
this was U.S. men's national team Twitter at its absolute finest, by the way.
Absolute finest, figuring out where he was in Orlando. We had someone examining the grass to know it was in Orlando. It was top tier investigative journalism.
We had tack photoshopping him at Disney World. Like, it was just excellent. Yeah. Absolutely excellent quality Twitter.
The saga will continue, by the way. I have no doubt. So we'll keep a close eye on it, obviously, and we'll talk about it as we go. Let's talk about someone else in league events. Someone by the name of Lionel Messi, who still hasn't made a decision on his future after this season. No one knows if he's going to remain at PSG, go back to Barcelona, maybe come to the MLS, to MLS, play for Inter Miami. There was this report that came out. And I wanted to talk about it because the report said all the MLS owners are willing and ready to pitch in for Messi's salary in it, should he choose to come to MLS, and let him choose whatever team he wants to play for, whether it's Miami, LA, New York. We all know it's going to be Miami, but
the specific reasoning for them saying that was like, they said that an MLS club cannot afford his salary. So right. I think we have to kind of start there. That's bullshit.
Yeah. I don't know who wrote the article, by the way. I don't have it in front of me. It's a BS report. Yeah. It did say the highest an MLS team can pay is like $3.5 million. What's Insigne on? $8 million?
I think he's in double digits. I think it's like 14 million, if I remember right.
Yeah, you might be right, which just even further proves the point that owners can shell out this money. But also it was hilarious because we've heard about for months now, and Don Garber has even said, look, if we want to bring Messi to this league, we know we have to be creative. We all know that that's going to be in the form of ownership percentage. That is the draw to Inter Miami in a closed system. How fast these franchise valuations have grown over time. If Messi can get a piece of that Inter Miami pie, and also get a very wonderful salary that he can be on via the designated player slot.
Yeah.
It's not going to be every owner paying the guy.
Yeah. It's such a ridiculous report. I feel like we need to just kind of talk about where this came from. So this came from Diario Sport in Barcelona. And the reason why I have to preface that is, as somebody that has followed Barcelona for the better part of 20 years, the sporting newspapers in that country are just total bullshit.
They constantly,
for anybody that doesn't know the Spanish, the Spanish sporting media landscape, basically you have two papers, two major papers that are like the Sports Illustrated of Barcelona, right? Like Barcelona will have, like, in the city and in the region, has two, Diario Sport and Mundo Deportivo. And then in Madrid, you have AS, there's another one that's like a second one in Madrid. All four of them, basically their entire portfolio is to be like Sports Illustrated or ESPN, but singularly devoted to one team.
Yes.
They have like to fill, they're a daily newspaper. They have to fill like 45 pages of inventory on one team on a daily basis. So what they end up doing is just making shit up and talking about it as if it's fact. It's like if Stephen A. Smith was a columnist and reported news As if he was a reporter. That's what it is. Like, oh, you know what? Messi's not going to go to MLS because they can't even afford him over there. He knows nothing. But like, that's exactly what it is. So in this particular thing, they were saying, well, an MLS team can't afford him because of the salary cap. Okay, so I guess the designated player rule doesn't exist, because the designated player rule allows you to sign three players off cap. So, okay, cap no longer exclusionary for Lionel Messi. What could theoretically be exclusionary is the money that the owner wants to pay him. Does the owner have the wealth and means to sign a player of that ilk and have it and pay him the money out of pocket? Have you met rich Americans? They're like some of the most wealthy people on earth. I am positive that MLS owners, specifically guys like Arthur Blank, I know we're mainly talking about Inter Miami right now, but like guys like Arthur Blank or what's the guy's name in Charlotte? I'm blanking on the name. David Tapper. Some of the most wealthy people on this planet, they can pull out the money out of their pocket and give it to them, and it's not going to make a dent in their wallet. So I don't understand why he would say this other than just ignorance on how the league operates. And to your point, the second most ridiculous thing is, why would the MLS league and the owners of other teams pay Messi's salary to directly compete against them and thwart their opportunity at championship runs? And it doesn't make any sense. So none of this all of it is stupid, and it's clearly bogus from Diario Sport, who just needs to fill inventory on their website.
But people ran with it on Twitter because it was a way to take a shot at MLS. And like, this would never happen in a serious league and all these different things like that. Well, it's not happening in MLS either. So slow down the train and stop looking for any reason to hate on the league, because it's not even true. So anything that comes out that's going to be against MLS is, of course, going to get the anti-MLS crowd going crazy about it. So it is what it is. Let's talk about a couple other MLS related things, Vince. Peter Vermes, manager who just got an extension of Sporting Kansas City, who will be the manager through 2026 with that team. Already the longest tenured manager in MLS, by the way. He had some interesting comments, as that team is struggling to not only get points, but to score goals. They only have two goals through five games this season, and just an absolutely incredible quote from him. Peter Vermes looks like a miniature press conference they were having outside of practice. There's like three microphones there outside of training.
That's all Sporting Kansas City knows how to do, is miniature press conferences.
Yeah, that's true. They also know how to do lawsuits, by the way, or threaten lawsuits. So he was hosting this mini press conference, and he was asked if any of the upcoming games are a must win for Sporting Kansas City because they've started this season so poorly. And he said, the only game that is a must win is a final. Now, Vince, I'm no genius, but I can tell you, to get to a final, it feels like there's a lot of must wins to get there. Maybe the elimination round before a final, maybe the elimination round two rounds before a final, maybe the whole regular season to get into the playoffs before you can get to the final. And that comment was just hilarious, because I tweeted this and I replied to your tweet, that imagine any European coach says this, starts off the season with no wins through five games, and the media asks him, is the next game a must win? And they go, you know what? It really, like, finals are really the only, like, it's the only must wins in my eyes. They'd be fired the next day if they said something like that. It's so stupid, but it's so funny that it's that stupid.
It's so stupid. And honestly, like, there's two things I want to talk about on this. First, he's not a terribly wrong. As it relates to MLS, we're going to get to results in a second, but I mean, his team is looked just absolute shit. They have 2 points from five games, 0.40 points per game, to start the season. And if they win next week and other results go their way, they're in the playoffs. it doesn't make any sense to me why they would format the playoffs this way. It just doesn't incentivize the regular season whatsoever. So I want to kind of highlight his point on that, of saying he's not technically wrong. The second point I want to make on this is, like, if I was Don Garber, I would absolutely despise two people more than anybody else in this league. And it's Peter Vermes and it's Bruce Arena. And the reason why I say that is because this isn't Peter Vermes's first offense. Remember when he was talking about Leagues Cup a couple years ago, yeah, and they were trying to hype up Leagues Cup, and he was just like, yeah, these are glorified friendlies. I'm going to play my academy guys. Like, these are stupid. I don't even understand why I'm having to play in these. And meanwhile, the league is trying to hype it up, trying to get people to show up to games and saying, like, oh, this is a big deal. And Peter Vermes just comes out and tells his fans, hey, don't show up to my games. They don't matter. So here he does it again. Like, if I was a Kansas City fan and I heard my manager and sporting director, by the way, he literally is the GM and coach of the team, say, hey, none of these games matter until the playoffs, I'd be like, okay, I guess I'm not going to buy season tickets. I guess I'm not going to show up to the stadium. Why would I? None of these games matter. There's no stakes involved. What's incentivizing me to watch your game? And then the second thing, Bruce Arena. We talked about this a couple weeks ago. Bruce Arena told the media the other day, it will take 3 months to get his team rounded into form. In what world does it take 3 months to get a team ready to play games? I don't understand that. Like, any European manager that's not ready from day one, doesn't have his team ready from preseason in day one, any NBA team, like, just think about any other league. The NBA regular season doesn't matter. Have you ever heard an NBA coach say he's not going to have his team ready to play until January? Like, that doesn't make any sense.
It's so funny because Peter Vermes, you mentioned Stephen A. Smith earlier, but Peter Vermes is like, if you put Stephen A. Smith as the coach of a team and having that mentality of the only thing that matters is the ring, that's kind of what Peter Vermes is going for here. But also, you don't really have the right to say that the only must wins are finals when you haven't been to one in a while.
That's so exactly right. The playoffs this year, Peter, come on. Jesus Christ,
whatever percentage of the league makes the playoffs, however big that percentage is, I hope we come down to the stretch And Sporting Kansas City is like 3 points out of the playoffs. And then we can look back on their game after Seattle. And if they don't end up winning next week, we can go, man, that game really was a must win, wasn't it, Peter? I hope someone brings it up.
You also hope that because you're a St. Louis fan. But
and they threaten lawsuits on fan-run podcasts. So, yeah, I have a bone to pick with Sporting Kansas City right now.
Yeah, but honest to God, you're absolutely right. Like, he hasn't made the playoffs, what, last 2 years, right? They haven't made the playoffs in 2 years. And they're currently one of the worst teams in the league. They don't look even remotely close to the playoffs in the Western Conference, unless they have a massive, massive turnaround later in the season. I mean, again, he's not technically wrong, but his track record, his recent track record, doesn't really make me feel like, if I was a Sporting Kansas City fan, and thank God I'm not, I wouldn't feel comfortable with him saying this. I'd be like, why the fuck is this guy still the manager? Seriously.
But does he have more job security than any manager in MLS?
He does, because he just got an extension. He got an extension for missing the
playoffs. That's the crazy part. He can miss the playoffs and say these things, and no one in MLS has more job security than that guy.
But this is what we always talk about. Like, we always talk about how the fact, like, there are only a few teams that seem to operate on results. Like, Columbus, to their credit, did it last year. Like, Caleb Porter won them a championship a couple years ago, and they turned around and fired him for missing the playoffs last year. That seemed real. It seemed authentic, right? You miss the playoffs in a league where it is so difficult not to make the playoffs. And if you're a team with resources, if you're a team that has the capabilities and the expectations to be in the running for MLS Cup and for other trophies on a year-to-year basis, you need to respond to results. I don't care what you've done for me in the past. It's what have you done for me lately? And lately, Peter Vermes hasn't done shit. And you know, Sporting Kansas City doesn't care. And this is what we talk about, man. There's no expectations and no stakes involved in this league sometimes.
I just thought of this too. For Peter Vermees to be talking down on League's Cup about the games not mattering and stuff, he probably cares more than any manager about U.S. Open Cup. So I don't know what this guy is on or what goes through his mind, but I know some Sporting Kansas City fans are tired of him. Props to those people. It seems he's gone to another level this year, it seems like. So it'll be interesting to see how the results go, because eventually I think they're going to run into some must-win games. Eventually, at some point in the season, you run into them.
At some point
you're in a must-win situation.
Try to win a couple games.
Yeah, I think even with the top nine teams in each conference making the playoffs, you probably need to win like five. I don't know. We'll find out whenever we come to the end of the season, because I think there could be some bad teams in that nine spot. Other MLS related stuff, which, by the way, this last week at MLS was so weird because, of course, MLS decides to play through FIFA international windows, which, if we want to be taken seriously as a league, we can't do that. This is the amount, especially as MLS grows in notoriety and gets better quality players, the amount of players missing from these teams was insane.
There's a couple, like, speaking of what Peter said about, like, okay, regular season games don't matter. There's nothing that tells your fans that regular season games don't really matter more than being okay with your best players missing from those games. And MLS is they are, right? Like, they play through international breaks. All of your best players are obligated to go play for their national teams. Like, the clubs cannot turn down those call-ups. If it's a FIFA international break, they're obligated to release the player if they're called. So, you know, it's basically just the league saying, we're okay. Like, we're going to continue to recruit really good players. And by the way, that's actually an issue for recruitment. You know, when you're trying to recruit a player and say, hey, but by the way, we still play games and you're going to lose game checks simply because you're out on international break. That's screwed up, man. And it doesn't make any sense to me why they consistently do this. And you're right. Like, it makes it very difficult to evaluate what the results were this weekend. Like, Atlanta lost 6-1, I think, right? Wasn't that the final?
6-1. No Thiago Almada.
Yeah. Who's the MVP of the league right now?
No, Miles Robinson.
We talked about Miles Robinson. Yeah, No Giacomakis.
To Columbus's credit, Robinson, they had no Cucho and no Zella Rayan. Mm-hmm. But Atlanta was just they were just bombarded with these absences. Miles, like you said, Miles Robinson, another one that.
And we talked about how good Miles Robinson was earlier in the pod. Like that's a massive, massive loss.
Yeah, big time, big time. So that you can't take that into account when evaluating Atlanta, I don't think, with those players missing.
And MLS doesn't have the depth for that. We talk about this all the time. Like, you lose one of your first 11 players, the drop-off to second team is so stark. Like, it's like USL quality. So uh-huh. Like, I don't understand why they are consistently okay with playing like this. And I get it, this year they're trying to implement League's Cup and pausing the league, and so maybe it made it more difficult to you know, not compress the schedule enough in order to do it. But if I was the league, I would simply just play more Wednesday dates. I know that they really wanted to
push MLS Cup back later into the year, and I know it's getting cold in a lot of parts of the country at that point, but maybe just add a couple weeks if you need to.
Yeah, it doesn't matter if it's later in the year because the final is going to be in LA this year.
World championship, by the way, according to Magic Johnson.
Yeah, but you know, it's like one of these things, man. I just don't understand why they consistently message to their viewers that games don't matter, right? Like,
yeah,
playing through the international break messages that it's like, we're okay with you watching our second teams play second teams simply because we don't think that you know the difference. And it's a little bit of a slap in the face.
Mm-hmm. I think you're lying though, because the final this year is clearly going to be in St. Louis, because St. Louis City is not going to lose a game. And riding a perfect start to the season through five games, I can't give an unbiased take on this, so I want yours, that St. Louis goes into Salt Lake last weekend, wins 4-0. That I'm taking something from, not only because I'm a St. Louis City fan and because I can, but there weren't really many players missing from either of those teams as far as international window. So I am taking something from that game, and going on the road in MLS is hard, and winning 4-0 on the road is hard as well. And St. Louis City did it. So perfect start to the season, Vince, and it keeps rolling. What were your thoughts? I know you tweeted, why do teams keep passing to St. Louis? Already up 2-0 at that point. It's a moot point. So João Klaus just has this aura around him.
You stole one of them. I honest to God, do not understand this. I do not get it. Why does this keep happening? It's
now, St. Louis
so
City invented
weird.
Pressing.
It is so weird. Like, remember in week one where this happened, and I was actually like, you know, killing people for trying to use that as like, oh, league quality, MLS quality, and stuff like this. The center backs passed to the strikers, and one of the things that we said on the pod at the time was like, this is like a once every 20 year occurrence. Like, it's happened 3 times in 5 games. I'm no longer right. I don't know what the hell's going on.
Yeah. When it happened, I turned to my wife and I was like, I was like, no way. There's no way that just happened again.
I just don't get this. Here's my second point about St. Louis. They've played Austin.
Oh, you're going down this road.
They played Charlotte. They played Portland. They played San Jose, and they played Salt Lake. Name me one team that's like a bona fide, I know they're going to be in the playoffs this year team.
Austin's going to be in the playoffs. And on the road at Austin is a tough game. So is on the road at Portland, although Portland is terrible.
No,
I'll
way.
Give you that.
I will give you Austin. I will concede Austin. I'm not going to concede you Portland. Portland is a dumpster fire. They're not
They're
good.
So bad.
They're so bad,
but you have to play who's in front of you, right? And a lot of teams in MLS get caught up in these games, like especially on the road against maybe your average mediocre teams. Some of the best teams lose to those teams. So I think it is a testament to St. Louis going in there and winning, at least winning and comfortably.
Definitely. I don't want to, like, you know, make St. Louis fans hate me on this podcast. I'm just saying, let's all calm down.
You're a friend. You're a friend of the of yeah. St. Louis City, Vince.
I just want everybody to calm down. I like this. There is going to be a regression here. I picked them to make the playoffs. You remember that? I picked them to make the playoffs this year. So, like, I think they will make the playoffs. Will they win the Supporters Shield? No. I do think that they'll make the playoffs, though.
I do want to make it very clear, too, that I am being – I know people have been rubbed the wrong way by St. Louis City fans already this year. I want to make it very clear I'm being very sarcastic when I say St. Louis is never going to lose a game. This is going to end at some point, right? Like, it's going to come down, but I'm enjoying the high while it's happening. But I'll accept defeat when it comes. I'll accept defeat. And I think St. Louis at this point is going to be a 5 or 6 seed come the end of the year. Before the season, I said they'll be in the play-in game in the 8 and 9. I think the start to the season has pushed them into that 5-6 range for me.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. Like, I had them in the play-in. I had them winning the play-in. And I think that they might not even need the play-in. I think that you're right. They'll probably be like a 6 or 5 seed.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll see. We'll continue to follow that. And it's a home game against Minnesota this weekend, which should be another W. But of course, we know in MLS, wackier things have happened. So we'll see. Because Minnesota's not
the
schedule. Oh, come on.
The league compiled their schedule to just front load some easy competition and told 3 teams to pass them the ball.
Yeah. The game to watch is going to be not this weekend, but next weekend at Seattle. That is a massive test of, you don't have to win that game, but prove your start to the season wasn't a fluke is going to be what that was or what that game is, especially if St. Louis goes into that game 6 wins out of 6, which is why I think this weekend could be a trap game. It's going to be a classic. You're looking ahead too far to Seattle. So we'll see what happens, of course, but Seattle, that's a big test to St. Louis to see, can you at least prove that you can play with the top teams in MLS and prove it wasn't a fluke.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that one. Early prediction, 2-0 Seattle, but I think it's going to be a good litmus test for them.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Any other things from the MLS weekend? I think Cincinnati, I want to touch on Cincinnati. They have started the season incredibly well. I picked them first in the East. and Philadelphia did have a lot of players on international duty. They're struggling out of the gates here. I know they're fighting on multiple fronts in Champions League and different things like that, but Philadelphia has been not impressive so far from what we thought they would be.
No, yeah, they're on multiple fronts. I think that kind of explains it. We'll see if they can be healthy. And then once their Champions League run ends, I think they'll start to turn it on a little bit. I don't know. I tweeted this out at the beginning of the season of like, I'm going to give you 5 games and then I'm going to start passing some judgments. And because I didn't look ahead and realized that the 5th game was an international break, I'm going to postpone that until next season. Next week.
Next season, we'll tell you how the teams last season did.
What's the Peter Vermees thing? This season doesn't matter.
yeah, exactly. Next season's a must-win season, Vince.
Yeah, but I think this is the week that I'm going to start to pass judgment. Like, let's see how they do in week 6. Then every team will have played 5 games. And you know, we'll have seen 5 games from most with their full rosters. So after this week, I'm going to start passing some judgments. We'll go some like who's up, who's down, stock up, stock down type of thing next week. This week, I'm not gonna, you know, jump the gun and do that. The one thing I'll say, the international break, which is simply just a problem. The only other thing that I noticed this week, I don't know if you know, this is just a stupid MLS thing. Did you watch the Portland LA Galaxy game?
Oh, thank God I did not. No.
0-0 draw.
I watched like 30 minutes. I watched the first 30 minutes. And my wife wanted to go do something. I was like, let's go. This is ugly.
0-0 draw. Not a good looking game. It was the one game that I could really watch live this weekend while I was in Trinidad for the wedding. And mm-hmm. So I was kind of like, it was also my opportunity to test whether or not the international no blackout thing worked on Apple. So I wanted to see that. So I was just kind of watching on my phone. And I was thrown off because like the first 5-6 minutes I was watching it, I honest to God thought the Galaxy was Portland because they were playing in green.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I saw people saying that on Twitter. Yeah. And I saw it too in the first. Yeah.
I was so blown. Like, first and foremost, like, I get that MLS wants to sell the jerseys, but the amount of times in the first 5 weeks that the home team has played in their secondary kit just for marketing reasons, that's what happened this weekend. Like, both Portland and LA used the opportunity to try to sell their new jersey that they just released. But I mean, I really wish the league would have thought about that ahead of time and just said, no, the Galaxy can't play in green in Portland. That's a little weird.
Yeah. I'm trying to think, I might be wrong on this, but did the Sounders wear the Bruce Lee kit at home at one point this season?
They did. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think twice actually.
There should definitely be, look, there's teams in MLS. You take advantage of these teams that have unique looks that you recognize.
Yeah.
The Sounders right. wear green at home. The Timbers wear green at home. Yeah. LAFC wears black.
Nashville wore their black kits twice at home already this season. Yeah, they're very much the yellow. Like that.
That's same with Columbus.
Look. Yep.
These teams that have a unique home look that people recognize, you got to wear that at home. Like, it just think of like the Premier League, and every time the team is home, you know, they're wearing their colors. City wearing the city blue, Chelsea wearing blue, United and Liverpool wearing their reds. There's, you don't mess with that. you let the team at home, you know, wear that home jersey, that home clean look.
Yeah. And the other thing is like, I don't know, like, if I'm the home fans, right, I'm at the stadium, maybe I guess they're thinking like, oh, well, they'll see it on the field and they'll be attracted to it and go buy it in the team shop. But if like they're doing all the promotions, like you hear the announcers talk about it, like they talked about this on the Athletic article after the first week of Apple. And they were saying how like it was getting kind of obnoxious that they were they were bringing up the jerseys and talking about like, oh yeah, look how slick the Johnny Cash jerseys look and stuff.
Yeah.
I personally, I'm totally okay with that. I really don't see an issue with it, but all the Nashville fans are at the stadium. they don't hear that. So like in my mind, it's actually better that they wear those secondary kits on the road when the Nashville fans are watching the Apple game. So I don't know. I just don't know why they consistently playing in their secondary kits at home. It's a little odd. And especially I wish that the league would have noticed, like, wait, LA Galaxy is going to play green in Portland. That doesn't make any sense. Let's switch that up.
Yeah, it doesn't add up at all. All right, well, next week's episode then, we'll get Vince's rundown. After every team has played at least five games, we'll get the rundown of who's firing on all cylinders, who's not, who needs to be fired after five games, and who's playing really well and is absolutely going to win MLS Cup. We'll do that next week. We'll talk about that.
I'm going to bring it. I told you guys at the beginning of the season, I want to try to manufacture these expectations. So I'm not Peter Vermees. I am the anti-Peter Vermees. I'm going to pass judgment and call for jobs early in the season.
All I'm saying is LA Galaxy have not won this season, and they play Seattle this weekend. So that is all I'm saying. Keep an eye on that game, because if that game goes Seattle's way, I think I know one team that Vince is going to be all over next week. So yeah, it's been a great podcast, Vince. Thanks as always for doing this. I'm glad you enjoyed it, Trinidad. I'll talk to you next week. Everybody reach out to us on Twitter with any questions, messages. Let us know if you like the podcast. Don't let us know if you hate it. You can let us know if you like it, though. We appreciate all the feedback. At Dalton Kemper on Twitter. He is at USMNT_thoughts. And until next time, Vince, I'll see you later.
See ya.